This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Tomorrow, 4:05, first pitch, first game of the year. The Nats open up in Cincinnati. Josiah Gray will be on the hill. Mark Zuckerman will be covering it all year long. For, of course, Masson. You can follow Mark on Twitter, on X, at Mark Zuckerman, Zuckerman. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So, last year this time, the expectation really was of an awful season. They had the lowest or second lowest with the Oakland A's win over under total before this season began, and they cleared it easily. It was like 59.5. They ended up winning 71 games. There's a little bit more expectation, the over-under 66.5 this year. Will they exceed that? Are they better than people think?
I think so. I think the thing that everyone has to keep in mind, and it's why this season, to me, really has to be broken into two parts. There's the team that they're going to start the year with tomorrow, which has some talent, but still has a good number of these just sort of stopgaps, veterans they brought in on one-year deals or a few guys who've been here for a while but don't really figure into the long-term plan. And then over the course of the season, they're going to start calling up these top prospects of theirs who we saw in spring training. And so the team they're going to have at the end of the year, to me, is going to be a lot different and a lot better, hopefully, than the team they start the year with. And so I do think there is progress here, and I think – it's hard to put a number on wins and losses necessarily. I'm officially going with 76. Maybe that's too optimistic, but I do think this is a team that at the end of the year, people are going to look at and say, okay, they're on track now, and we're not talking about the long distance future anymore. We're talking about the immediate future because all the pieces are finally in place at the big league level.
So I think there is some excitement about those pieces. Speak to those pieces. As the season goes along, in order of significance, give me the players that you think end up by the end of the year making us feel like 2025 could be a contending season.
You know, it's funny because Dylan Cruz is the name around baseball and, you know, is the top-ranked prospect among them, given his track record at LSU, the fact he was the number two overall pick last year. But watching this spring, it really struck me that he's still got a ways to go. And that's not a bad thing. You know, I mean, he just came out of college 9 months ago. And so it does take time. Not everybody bursts onto the scene like Juan Soto or Bryce Harper did. I do think we'll see him before the end of the season. But before we get to that point, I think James Wood, who really stood out this spring and had a good case to make the roster coming out of spring, he's just a notch below Cruz in terms of like how they're viewed around the sport. He is the complete package and a local kid who grew up in Montgomery County. I think we're going to see him pretty soon in the outfield. I also think we're going to see Trey Lipscomb, another local kid from Frederick, who almost made the opening day roster. Finally, they made the announcement yesterday that he wouldn't. But an infielder who I think is going to end up starting for them at second base or third base before long, maybe even the first one who comes up. So I'm looking at Lipscomb and Wood coming up early in the year, and Wood in particular having a big impact. And then later in the season, I think we will see Dylan Cruz. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be an outstanding player, but maybe not immediately the all-everything superstar that he might be hyped to be.
You know, I want to go back to the draft, and your memory of this is going to be much better than mine. But I remember the pitcher from LSU who was Cruz's teammate, Skeens, I think his name was, was the first pick, and Cruz was the second pick. If the Nats had the first pick and the draft was today, knowing what they know about Cruz and whatever we know about Skeens at this point, who would the pick be?
You know, I don't want this to come across as it's negative on Cruz, or, you know, I think they still very much believe in him. And, you know, he did great at the lower levels of the minors last year, and I think he just wore down by the time he got to Double A at the end. But I do think all along that if they had their choice, and this was all going to depend on what the Pirates did, I thought they would draft Skeens only because of the idea that an elite pitcher who throws over 100 consistently is such a hard thing to find in the sport nowadays, especially to get him cheap on a rookie deal, you know. So I always felt like he would be the guy if they had the choice. But I don't think they were disappointed to get Cruz at all. The fascinating part of this is that the number four pick, Wyatt Langford from Florida, the Rangers picked him. He's on their opening day roster, and that's the defending World Series champs. And so
was
there
he
were
older?
People at the time.
Wasn't he
no,
older?
He,
like the
he same age as Cruz,
okay,
coming out of college. And so there were people that said, like, this guy, don't sleep on him. He might be better than all of them. Again, it's the beginning of all their career, so we don't judge him yet. But it is kind of interesting to me that the World Series champs had a place for last year's top pick, and the Nationals did not, and the Pirates did not, although I think Skeens is going to be up within a matter of weeks for them.
Talking to Mark Zuckerman. So this is Davey Martinez's seventh season as the manager. First of all, I'm just curious where he ranks among the MLB managers in terms of tenure at this point.
He's longevity. Getting up there. He is, I think, second in the NL East. Only Brian Snitker's ahead of him. But it is amazing when you think about the history here, where nobody previously lasted more than 2.5 seasons with
right.
the Nats. And here he is going into year seven. I looked this up today. Later on this season, he's going to have more games managed for the Nationals than the last three combined, Dusty Baker, Matt Williams, and Davey Johnson. I mean, think about that. It's pretty remarkable. And the fact that he's been given this opportunity, and you don't see this a lot, to take over a team that was trying to win. He did win in year two, won the whole thing. Then they tore it all down, and he's getting the opportunity now to see it through again. You don't often see that happen.
So why are we seeing
that? I think it's the timing of it all and the nature of it all in that they tore it down pretty quickly, and the GM and the manager were retained. And I think at this point, whatever you might think of Davey, once they decided to tear it down a couple years ago, I feel like you had to, you either had to tear it all down and replace the GM and the manager at that point, or if you're going to let them start this thing, then you got to let them see it through, at least give them the opportunity. And so that's why they both got extensions last year. It is a rare case. I mean, you don't see that necessarily. And if they do win again at some point here, make the playoffs again, that's pretty rare company for a GM and manager to win a World Series, tear it all down, start all over again, and then build it up again and actually win. That would be quite an achievement if they can pull it off.
I agree, and you have much more information on this historically than I do, but you don't do that just because. You do that because, as Mike Rizzo and ownership, they really believe in Davey Martinez as a manager. He must be
sure.
A good one.
Yeah, and I think they saw how he dealt with all the turmoil at the beginning there, the 1931 start, and how he kept them all together. And, you know, winning a World Series buys you a lot of goodwill. I mean, it's funny. If you really think about his tenure, 6 years here, only one of them would most people consider a success, and that's the one where they won it all. The previous year was a disappointment. Ever since then, they've finished in last place. But I think most view that as a reflection of the roster and not of the manager. And, you know, whatever you want to say about the guy, you have to acknowledge that he motivates his players. That no matter what the talent gap may be, they play hard all the way through to the last out. The boys battle, as we joke about, but there's something to it. Players love playing for him. He has a positive, upbeat mindset. And, you know, I think it's also impressive that he can have that style both with a team full of star players like they had a few years ago and now a team full of young guys. You know, a lot of times you'd say, oh, you want a different style of manager, but I think his style fits and he's been able to adapt to the new group that he's with now.
But if Josh Hader gets one more out, he's probably not the manager right now.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it's true. It's true.
We're talking to Mark Zuckerman. So Josiah Gray is going to be the opening day starter tomorrow in Cincinnati. Help me with this, because I was talking to Tommy about this the other day on the podcast, that it's either been Scherzer, Strasburg, or Corbin basically for like over a decade, right? Or did I miss somebody in there?
No, you're right. The last opening day starter that wasn't one of those big three was Levon Hernandez in 2011. That's how far back we're going. And so this is a legitimate passing of the torch now to the next generation. And it was frustrating for everyone to see Corbin take the mound the last couple of years. That was by default. It's just none of the young guys were proven yet. And he was still at least close enough removed from being good for them and winning the World Series that you felt like he had to sort of ceremoniously take that honor. But they're past that point now. I think Josiah Gray earned the right to do this. And I think there's also symbolism in Mackenzie Gore starting Monday's home opener against the Pirates. They could have set it up where Corbin was that guy. And instead, Davey wanted Gore to be that guy to say, we are turning the page. These are the two who we hope are going to lead us into the future, along with Cade Cavalli when he comes back from his injury. And I think it's just a further distancing of themselves from the past and understanding that the group that's going to win again here is already here in a lot of cases. They're not all here yet, but they're starting that process and they don't have to rely on past performance anymore. They can look ahead to the future.
So let's talk about the rotation. After it's Gray and Gore who you really rely on here, right? And then after that, is it just a huge question mark?
Yes and no. I mean, Corbin's going to start the second game. He's finally in the last year of his contract. I think we all know what he is at this point. There's no illusions that he's going to suddenly turn back into his former self. Jake Irvin, who doesn't get a lot of attention, he was a rookie last year who wasn't supposed to pitch as much as he did, and he wound up making 24 starts for them. He had a great spring. He's going to start the third game Sunday in Cincinnati, and I'm really interested to see how this year goes for him, if he can continue that and actually be a part of this going forward. Then Gore's the fourth, and then Trevor Williams, who was awful last year, he's the fifth starter by default, but I keep telling everyone that's a temporary position, I think. Cade Cavalli, who was their top pitching prospect until he tore his elbow last year, he's expected to be back in June. He's going to be in the rotation when he's healthy. And Jackson Rutledge, who was a first-round pick for them in 2019, finally made his debut last September. He's at AAA, but I don't expect him to be there long. I think he'll be the first one called up. So likewise, when I said they do still have a few of these placeholders, Corbin and Williams are the placeholders. Corbin will be here because of the contract. Williams could get moved to the bullpen sooner rather than later, and I think we'll see more of these young kids as the season plays out.
All right. tell me what you think right now going into this season is the absolute strength of the team, and then what's the biggest concern area?
I think the strength is the bullpen, which is something we maybe haven't said here in a long, long time. Even during the good years, that was always a huge question mark. But they have legit depth there. Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, Tanner Rainey's back from his injury. They signed several veteran relievers who have, like, actual big league closing experience. Dylan Floro, Matt Barnes, Derek Law. There's real depth there. They had to cut guys at the end of the camp who any other year would have been locked to make the team, and they just didn't have room for them. So I think, I know bullpens are fickle year to year. You never really know what you're going to get, but I think there's enough depth there to make me think that that's going to be a strength for them. The weakness is, I think, the same thing that was last year, and that's a lack of power in their lineup. Now, they signed Joey Gallo, big-time home run hitter. He also strikes out a ton, right, and has a career batting average under 200. So it's all or nothing with him. He had a bad spring. You hope that he gets hot at some point and goes on like one of those Kyle Schwarber-like home run tears. But beyond him, it's Lane Thomas, who did well for them last year. Joey Meneses, who's a good solid hitter but didn't hit for a whole lot of power. And then you're waiting for the kids to come up. Wood and Cruz are going to be power hitters whenever they get here, but that may not happen right away. So I do think this is a lineup that's still going to struggle to score runs, certainly to score runs in bunches. They're going to have to manufacture them, and I just don't know that they have the ability to do that and, you know, score consistently 5-6 runs a night. It's they're going to need the pitching to be outstanding, I think, to make up for the lack of offense.
Do they have a player right now in their everyday lineup, and I would point to C.J. Abrams for starters, that has a chance to have an all-star caliber year?
Yeah, I think C.J. is number one on that list, and it got overlooked a little bit because he struggled the first half last year. When they moved him to the leadoff spot in July, the rest of the year was phenomenal for him. I mean, he wound up breaking Trey Turner's club stolen base record for the season with 47, and something like 35 of them came after the All-Star break. So he gets on, he can do big things, and he hit 18 homers on top of that. So this is a guy who can be easily a 2020 player, if not 25 homers. I would put him high on the list. I think Lane Thomas gets overlooked, but, I mean, he hit 28 homers last year, led the National League in outfield assists, just a good, solid, all-around player who's not going to be the star of the team, but I think could be really good. And I thought I had a case for the All-Star team last year. So those are the two. Keibert Ruiz, you hope he puts it all together. There were glimpses of it. He was a really good clutch hitter, runners in scoring position last year. Didn't hit for a ton of power and really struggled defensively behind the plate, which is something they want to see improvement on because they've committed to him. He's the guy they've locked up already for 8 years. They need to know that he is going to be their catcher long term, not just as a good hitting catcher, but as a good defensive catcher as well.
The division's a problem, right? It's certainly top heavy with Atlanta and Philadelphia, but even the other two teams, I think, pretty much have higher over and under numbers in terms of expected wins this year. I mean, are the Nats staring a last place finish, even if they're significantly improved?
You know, I've actually got them in fourth ahead of the Marlins, who I know they made the playoffs last year, got the 84 wins, but they've had a ton of injuries to their pitching rotation. And didn't do a whole lot this winter in terms of adding other pieces. So, I mean, they're always still kind of the Marlins in my mind where you got to prove it to me that you are more than just a team hoping the young guys come together, and they aren't that yet. So I do think the Nats could finish ahead of them, you know, not guaranteed. And the Mets, you know, they went all in the last couple of years, blew up in their faces. They traded away Scherzer and Verlander, and they didn't do a whole lot this winter. Now, they still have some good players, and they're paying a lot of money to guys. And I know that Steve Cohen, their owner, is envisioning, if not this year, by next year, trying to go back all in again, maybe signing Juan Soto. But for the moment, I don't know what they're going to be. So, I mean, if there's a dream scenario out there for the Nats, maybe you could finish in third ahead of the Mets if those guys do fall apart again and aren't investing in the future quite yet. But probably in the fourth to fifth range. And, you know, it's really about taking that step up this year, having the young guys debut and look like they're legit, and then I think a year from now, it's a different story, especially if ownership is willing to start spending on free agent skin.
Yeah, which they obviously weren't willing to do this offseason. So that's where I'll finish up. Actually, two quick ones to finish up. Number one, So what's the deal with Steven Strasburg right now? Like, he's never going to pitch again. I think we understand that. But with respect to actual retirement.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, he's not going to pitch again. He knows it. They know it. They all acknowledge it. But they cannot agree on the financial terms of that. And he's under contract for three more years, making over $100 million. It's a guaranteed contract, but there, you know, are ways in there that I guess parts of ownership, and I want to be careful when I say this, it's not all of ownership, my understanding. It's parts of ownership believes that he should at least defer some of that money or renegotiate some of the terms of it. And Steven
Why?
And Scott Boras have said no.
I think they should say no. This is always... By the way, at the time, the deal was considered to be a pretty good deal for the team, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a seven-year extension for a pitcher already in his 30s, so there was always the risk of injury, but they could have taken out insurance on it, and they chose not to. It would have been very cost prohibitive, but in the end, it probably would have helped them out, and maybe they wouldn't be in this position. So it's this game of chicken. They're kind of staring at each other, and nobody willing to budge, and so what's going to happen is, they'll, I believe, tomorrow officially put him on the 60-day IL again. He'll spend the whole year on that. When next offseason comes, they're going to have to put him back on the 40-man roster and use up a spot. We're going to go through this dance again for 3 years until it's over, unless they can come to some kind of agreement here on how to do this. The shame of it is, you know, they wanted him to come to spring training. They want him to be a part of the organization and help the young guys. And my understanding is he has no interest in doing anything for them at the moment, not under the current structure and the current situation.
Well, does he have any sort of requirement, you know, per the contract on the 60-day IL? Does he have to be around the team? Does he have to report for rehab? Like, what is his, you know, bare minimum requirement so that he's not, you know, in violation of the contract?
Right, and that's what I was wondering, if it was going to come to that this spring, when Mike Rizzo said we expect him to report on the day that was the designated you know, required report date for everyone in baseball. That day came and went and nothing happened. And everything that I've asked since has suggested that they're not going to try to take that step and say that he's somehow in violation of the contract. You're opening up a whole can of worms if you do that. And you're going in for a major fight over that if it does come to that. You know, I think because there is this acknowledgement that he can't really rehab in an attempt to pitch again, and I think they all understand that, so I don't know there's a whole lot of recourse for them. But if they want to go that route, they are, you know, it's World War III if that happens, and now who knows what the result of all that would be.
At some point, I mean, for a guy that pitched one of the all-time great postseason games, Game 6 of the World Series, which got the Lerners and Ted Lerner what he desired when he bought the team back, you know, in 2005. At what point, where's the juice that's worth this petty squeeze? It seems petty to me, and I think it could be, I don't want to say penny wise, pound foolish, because it's not penny wise, it's millions of dollars, but like, it's just the reputation that they're going to take a major hit on with players around the league and agents around the league, I would think.
Yeah, no, you're not alone in that line of thinking. And just beyond any of that, like, you have this iconic franchise player who spent his whole career here. Others who left, he stayed, won you know, the World Series, and lives in the area and continues and wants to remain here as his home in retirement. So you have to have a relationship with him. He needs to be, I know he's not the most public figure to begin with, but
right,
you want to believe that he'd come to the park every once in a while and do something. They're going to, in late April, the Astros come to town. They're going to have a 5-year World Series celebration for that series. And I'm told a bunch of players from the 2019 team are coming back. I don't know how Steven is going to show up to that under the current situation. And how can you have a celebration of this team that won the World Series and not have the guy who was the MVP, especially when he lives in town, but he's in disagreement with the team and probably isn't going to want to throw them any bones by showing up for that. It's sad. It should never have come to that. Unfortunately, this is where we are now.
I have a feeling a lot of ownership groups would have handled this much differently, and that would be really unfortunate if he's not there. He's one of the great clutch performers in the history of this city. You know, you put him up there with Riggo in terms of postseason totally, you know, delivering in the biggest moments, which he did over and over again. And it wasn't his fault that he got injured, and it wasn't his fault that they gave him that contract, you know, with him being in his 30s, with the prospect of or the increased possibility of an injury. Ridiculous, really, and unfortunate. But we'll see what happens. By the way, I know I've asked you this before, but is he a Hall of Famer or not? He's not, right?
No, there was that point after the 2019 World Series that I thought, okay, if he could do this for a few more years, he's going to have a good case for himself. And unfortunately, the bottom fell out, and you know, he's only made 8 starts since then. So, no, he'll go down as one of the great clutch performers ever, and you know, the most hyped pitching prospect ever. But I don't think there's enough breadth of performance for him to have the case for it.
Great to catch up. Hope you're well. Enjoy the start of the season. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Kevin.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Not only does he write for Masson Sports at MassonSports.com, he's got a Nats Chat podcast with our good friend Al Galdi. You can get that anywhere you get a podcast, and you can follow him on X on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!